Well, good morning and welcome to all, particularly our guests who join us here today for the offering of this Mass of the Madeleine on this fourth Sunday of Lent. Allow me to give you a brief update about the members of my family that I told you last Sunday. My mom underwent a heart surgery in Mansfield, Texas last Wednesday morning. She received a replacement valve, heart valve surgery. It went very well, and she is recovering. Spoke with her last night. She'll probably be in that particular hospital for a few more days, and then will be transferred to a cardiac rehab center probably for a couple of weeks, and probably, we hope, will be home by Easter. So right after Easter, I'll probably be going down and spend a few more days with her and to help her as well as my sister and brother-in-law in taking care of our mom. For my sister-in-law, Linda, she'll be continuing to meet with different doctors and has to wait a little bit for some things to be right with her, some of her test numbers before she can begin chemotherapy for treatment for her cancer. But your prayers on their behalf and for all of her family are greatly appreciated. My thanks to the priest from St. Pius, the 10th parish, who substituted a daily mass in my absence. Please know I'll be available to hear confessions this week, Tuesday evening from 6 to 7, Wednesday evening from 5:30 to 6. I'll be visiting Marquette School twice this week, not for lunch, but to hear confessions of the students on Wednesday and Thursday. And also please know that we have a county-wide election this Tuesday concerning the jail facility. And I ask you to please inform yourselves about what the questions are on the ballot and to vote your informed conscience. And pray that I'm awake tomorrow morning when they bring all the stuff for the we have a voting, we're a precinct, and so I have to open up the doors about 7 o'clock tomorrow morning so they can come in and bring all the stuff, put in the choir room, that's the voting place here at the Madeleine. Last September, I was camping in northern Georgia and for outdoors for a couple of days and nights. And on the first night, we were camped in a wooded area. And the first night, there was a heavy cloud cover that blocked out the full moon. And it was because of that cloud cover and because we were in under the trees, it was quite dark. Dark as in hard to see, hand in front of face, dark. If it had not been for the campfires that we had, it would have been even worse. We would have bumped even into more trees than we did in the darkness and fall into ditches and such. But the following night, the skies had cleared. And a bright, beautiful full moon was out. And I awoke sometime in the middle of the night because a light was shining in my face. It wasn't a flashlight. It wasn't a light from a campfire. It was a moonbeam. And I woke up and I could see all through the undergrowth, shafts of moonlight were coming into the forest canopy, illuminating in a remarkable and unique and beautiful way. I don't think I'd ever seen something quite like that. This unexpected, beautiful sight that had awakened me from my sleep. Now, today's gospel tells us of another unique and unexpected event, the giving of sight to a man born blind. And as with the woman at the well that we heard of last Sunday, and of next Sunday, we're going to hear about the raising of Lazarus from the dead. In this healing of the man born blind, and all three of these events are from John's Gospel, each one of them, in a way, is a summary of the Christian message and the church's proclamation of this message. It is a message in which we are told to rejoice, to be happy. And traditionally, the fourth Sunday of Lent is known as Laetare Sunday. Laetare is the Latin word to rejoice. And that's the first word that we heard in the opening antiphon from Mass today, because we're now a little bit more than halfway through the 6 weeks of Lent. And those purple vestments that are worn during Lent as a sign of penance, today they are replaced with rose-colored vestments. Or may perhaps think of them as salmon-colored vestments. Or dentine chewing gum colored vestments. Take your pick. But either way, they act as a visual sign telling us to prepare for Holy Week. Also, the music that we have, the joyful music from our children's choir today, also is a sign of that preparation, that joyful anticipation of Holy Week and of Easter, particularly for those that are preparing for baptism at the Easter Vigil, and for all of us, because on Easter Sunday, we will renew the promises of our baptism. And that too is a message in today's gospel. This telling of that encounter with Jesus that leads to some unique and unexpected results that reveal much about what we're preparing for in Lent. This encounter begins with a discussion about sin and physical blindness, because it was seen at the time that the two were linked. The two were connected. One was punishment for the other, blindness or any kind of physical disability. But Jesus, as you notice, changes the focus of the question from the question about blindness as punishment for sin as blindness as the symbol for sin. Sin from which Jesus has come into the world to save us from. And then something amazing happens, unique. Never happens anywhere else in the entire Bible. Usually when someone is cured from blindness, it's because they've lost it. They've lost it because of illness, because of age. That's several places in the Scriptures, but this time is unique. Someone born blind is given the gift of sight. And you know, you have to admit, it happens in a rather unique way. You know, usually I'm fine with holistic medicine. I'm open to what you might call homeopathic cures. But I got to admit, having someone, even Jesus, spit in the dirt, make clay, and then rub it in my eyes and tell me to go wash it off with water, that's going to be a stretch. I think I'd say, no offense, Jesus, but I'm going to go down the street to my eye doctor. And usually when Jesus heals somebody, he just does it. Be healed. It happens. But this time he does a physical action. And the healing is unique. And you know, as strange as it might sound, it works. You know, I got to meet the surgeon that did my mom's operation. And he doesn't have much you might want to call a bedside manner. He's just straightforward. We're going to do this, this, and this. Thank you. I'll see you after the operation. But as my mom said, I don't care if he's a baboon as long as he's a good surgeon. And he's a great surgeon, by the way. He did a great job. If it works, it works. And we don't complain. You know, but on that first Sunday of Lent, remember back how we heard that account of creation in the book of Genesis? How the first man is formed out of the clay and the Spirit of God is breathed into him to give him life. So now we have clay again is used to do something new, something unheard of, something unique, to give sight to one born blind. The washing with water takes place in a place called the Pool of Siloam. It's in Jerusalem. It's near the temple. It means to be sent. So you have the one who is sent by God to save the world, sends the man born blind to a place of water where his sight is given. In water, the man born blind becomes a new creation. And as with that woman at the well that we heard of last Sunday, this healing of the blind man, that's an image of baptism. There's healing, there's new life. But as unique, as unexpected, as beautiful as this is, it's what happens next that reveals something extraordinary about this encounter with Jesus. Because you'd think, when this happens, never happened before, this kind of miracle, this kind of sign, there'd be a great deal of laetare going on. A lot of rejoicing, thanksgiving, praise, adoration. But look what happens instead. There's doubt, fear, suspicion. Because that's what happens when the darkness encounters the light. And the contrast between light and dark, day and night, that's a major theme throughout John's Gospel. For where there is darkness, there's doubt. Such as, are you really that blind beggar? You look like him, but I'm not sure. Where there's darkness, there's fear. Is this man really your son? Was he really born blind? And if so, how does he see? Yes, he is our son. Yes, he was born blind. And as to who gave him his sight, ask him. Our son is old enough to tell you. Just please leave us alone. And where there's darkness, there's suspicion. This man Jesus is not from God because he does not keep the Sabbath. You see, this great sign has happened on the Jewish Sabbath on Saturday, the day in which you are to rest from all labor. Apparently, at least for some, that includes giving sight to someone born blind. The Pharisees, who are regarded as the most righteous and holiness of men, the ones who should be leading a celebration, instead are conducting an interrogation. You would think they would be used to the unique happening, such as prophets anointing shepherd boys to become kings, as we hear from the book of Samuel today. But such is the depth of their institutional blindness. Because they're in the dark, they're blind to this great sign that has happened in their midst. But the blindness of the Pharisee, that's our blindness as well. It's the result of the original blindness, or that original sin. We heard about that as well on the first Sunday of Lent. In Genesis, that first man, that first woman, they make that grab for power, that fruit of the tree of knowledge. That they, and not God, will determine what is good, what is evil, what is false, what is true, instead of recognizing that God alone has that power. That it is up for humanity to learn, to discern, to understand the difference between good and evil, light and dark, and live accordingly. It's from this original blindness that God the Son is sent into the world to save us from this blindness, to heal us of it, and that encounter with Jesus begins in our baptism. Remember what the first creative act that God does in Genesis? Let there be light. John's Gospel tells us that Christ is the light of the world. In baptism, we receive that light of faith. That's what that candle represents, that is given to the person being baptized. You know, and if they're big enough, we hand the candle to him or her. And if they're kind of small, you know, we don't usually entrust open flames with toddlers and infants. You know, we hand the candle to the parents or godparents. That candle is that symbol of the light of faith. That light of Christ coming to the world. And not just so that we can see in the darkness, not just so that we can live in the light, but so that we can become the light of Christ, that we can become the church. St. Augustine said that the woman at the well is symbolic of the church. He says the same thing about the man blind from birth. And while he does not first know who heals him, notice that there's a progression of understanding. There's a development of faith. Same as with us. Because he doesn't quite understand what's happened, but he ends up making a profession of faith, a belief in Jesus, and worshiping him. And along the way, something else unique happens. When he's asked by people, "Are you really the guy that was born blind and the beggar that we're used to seeing?" He just simply says, "I am." In Greek, the original language of John's Gospel, it's the words ego, eimi. That's the same words Jesus uses in John's Gospel when he's asked who he is. I am. When the woman at the well asks him, "Are you the Christ?" Jesus replies, "I am he." Before Jesus heals the blind man, he says, "I am the light of the world." And next Sunday, we will hear Jesus say to Martha, "I am the resurrection and the life." All this ties back to what God says to Moses in the burning bush, when Moses asked, "Who are you? What's your name?" And the divine name is I Am. This I Am is about the divinity of Jesus, and the I Am is about our identity in Jesus as the church. In baptism, we're made a new creation. We're washed clean. And we're healed of that original blindness. The light of Christ shines in the darkness of our lives. And the prayers, the penance, the acts of charity and Lent, they're to help us to see the light, to become the light. And that have that progression of faith, that development of understanding. And also to be aware of the reaction of darkness in our lives. To be aware of our doubts, such as, "You mean to tell me that that's a sin?" Those kind of doubts. To be aware of our fear, that we recognize our sin, but we're so ashamed, we're so afraid, that we refuse to believe that we can be forgiven. To recognize our suspicion. You know how it is. We say, "Do you know what he was doing last weekend? And he's here at Mass today?" Remember, grace, mercy, and forgiveness is offered by God to all. And is received by those who are open to them, not just the ones that we judge are worthy of them. The light has come into the world, And as John's gospel also tells us, the world prefers the darkness. That's why there is that reaction of doubt and fear and suspicion to the light. And you can add to it, at times, violence, especially when it comes to institutional darkness or the threat of violence. You know, the man's parents are threatened with expulsion. The man himself is thrown out into the street, and as we know, as we'll hear in 2 weeks, Jesus is crucified. Because those in darkness fear the light. And last week, last Monday to be specific, was the 34th anniversary of the assassination of Archbishop Oscar Romero in the Central American country of El Salvador. He was a vocal defender of the poor and a critic of his government's violent suppression of civil and religious liberties. And those in darkness in El Salvador had him shot dead as he offered Mass. And a little over a year later, in the neighboring country of Guatemala, Father Stan Rother, an Oklahoma-born missionary priest, was shot dead in the rectory of his parish church for pretty much the same reason. Those in darkness fear the light, and sometimes they react to it violently. No one's ever been brought to justice for these two murders, by the way. But both of these men are now candidates for canonization, because even though the world prefers the darkness, the darkness can never overcome the light. The light continues to shine. The light continues to be offered in ways that are unique, unexpected, and beautiful to wake us from sleep, as Paul says, like moonlight in a Georgia forest. Perhaps the most profound beauty is that we are now able to identify ourselves with Christ using the same words that He uses to describe Himself. I am. The unique beauty to say, I am a brother of Jesus. I am a sister of Jesus. I am a child of God. I am forgiven. I am made a new creation. I am one with Christ. I am one with the body of Christ on earth, His church. Our baptism allows us to say this. In baptism, we have put on Christ and entered into His life, death, and resurrection. It is the baptism that some are preparing to receive at Easter, and all the rest are preparing to renew at Easter. For as St. Paul tells us, you were once darkness, but now are light in the Lord. Live as children of the light, for light produces every kind of goodness, righteousness, and truth. So in these days of Lent, in goodness, righteousness, and truth, today we come rejoicing to approach this altar of thanksgiving, to receive another unique and unexpected and beautiful gift of Christ in the Eucharist. So as children of the light, may we always be able to say, yes, I do believe, Lord, and worship Him in spirit and in truth.